And hey, welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, what's going on?
Not much. Hanging out. Nice Friday here on the program. Michelle, how are you? What's going on?
Yeah, we're getting close to the point where this may be a robber ant next week against Mother Nature. It's April. Let's step this thing up a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's been the weirdest winter here that I've experienced here.
Snow.
And it's spring now.
Cold. It's April the 8th. I mean, I've been on April the 8th in Nashville before, and it's been 91 degrees. So let's get after it here a little bit.
It does look like we're according to, you know, my phone forecast, whatever that's called. What is that? Apple yep. Weather? Okay. that we're actually going to at least be into the 70s consistently next week. So that's got to be it, right? I mean, that's got to be the end of it.
I hope so. My goodness.
Although next Sunday, 63 high. Yeah, whatever. Still better than 48 high today.
Yeah, eventually we'll get there, I suppose. I'm supposed to ride in a race car today. The NASCAR race car out at the Nashville Super Speedway. So I'm hoping the rain holds off.
Oh, you are still supposed to.
Supposed to.
Is McCabe driving you?
God, I hope
Chaser
not.
Chaser driving.
Really hope not.
Maybe that.
I'd probably trust Chase, actually, because he does that iRacing stuff. So he might actually know what he's doing in that.
I was going to say, I mean, so far I've seen Chase try a lot of different sporting things.
Yeah.
Didn't go well, but maybe it's that. Because they are athletes.
They are.
No disputing that.
It's a sport. The outcome is not predetermined.
That is true, too, yeah. Golfers are athletes, too.
Hey, speaking of golf, how about Tiger yesterday? One under. He had an absolute seed on hole 16 that they're showing right now on the TV and put it about 3 feet from the cup. Finishes the round one under par. Now, he's tied for 10th, technically, and there's like 12 people that are tied for 10th at one under par, but pretty incredible yesterday from Tiger Woods. One under at the Masters, and, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to translate to that's what he's going to be all weekend long, but he looked pretty darn good out there yesterday.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's way exceeded my expectations. So I still think that the books are going to clean up.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, hey, kudos to him. And if he can, you know, have a good round, make the cut, have the whole weekend in the tournament, that'd be – how many shots back is he right now?
He is four back at the moment.
That's – I mean, hey, you got to be happy with that if you're him. Or if you're the millions and millions of people paying attention to this only because of him.
Yeah. And just want to point out, if you've been listening to Robbie and Rex Road all week, Joe Rex Road and Robbie Stanley have been telling you about Dustin Johnson. -3 yesterday for DJ. Two back of the lead. Looks pretty good. He's still my favorite to win.
Yeah, it's a good pick.
That's what we do. We make good picks.
Yeah, pretty much. Consistently.
Braves begin their season, their title defense last night in Major League Baseball. Can't go 162 anymore. You lose the first one to Cincinnati. The 162-0 season crushed immediately for the Atlanta Braves last night. Tough one.
Congratulations, Ryan Porth.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know, is Porth.
Is he a Cubs fan now?
Yeah, probably. He keeps tweeting about the Bulls like they're good or something. So if you still like the Reds, congratulations, Porth.
Way to go. Probably one of the few highlights for the Cincinnati Reds this year, my guess.
Hopefully he's listening before his daily tongue-lashing of Hubarkish.
Yes. Just giving it to him out there. Good stuff. Big win last night for the Preds. They get it done in Ottawa. Was not necessarily the prettiest game for the Predators. They gave up maybe a few dozen breakaways in that game. I exaggerate a little bit, but they did give up a few breakaways in that game. But ultimately, they're able to win the game. 3-2 the final score last night for the Predators in Ottawa. So now two big wins to start this week. Dallas loses in overtime last night to the Maple Leafs. So you've got a little bit of breathing room now, especially against Vegas. You're 4 points up on Vegas. Still have two games in hand on them as well. You're 2 points up on Dallas, with both of you having played 70 games at this point. You know, not again, a pretty game for the Predators last night, but they win 3-2. The 2 points are most important, and you'll take that and move on to Saturday.
Yeah, it's 2-1 down in the third, and it's like, man, talk about a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know? How could it be this much of a roller coaster to go, ooh, loss. Wow, impressive win. Ooh, loss. You can't do that. So, Yossi with the equalizer, very fitting that he's the guy who does it. 3-point night. Well, actually, it wasn't his. Sorry, Michelle. But it was the equalizing play, okay?
Well, you didn't get ahead of yourself. It was his goal for like 12 minutes, and then all of a sudden they changed it.
Yeah.
The puck was shot so hard that I've still yet to see an angle where Tanner Jeannot touched it, but they have way more angles than I do, but he ripped that one.
So,
good for Jeannot, though, driving to the net.
Yeah, there you go. That's what he does. So it's a big deal, you know, to get to this point. I mean, you got to get those 2 points in games like that. You're down to 12 to go. I still think 95% or whatever the money puck, that still seems a little high to me. But, I mean, as you said, Vegas, you got 2 games in hand on them and a 4-point lead. And that's the only way you're not in the playoffs is if something disastrous happens with them in the next 10 games for them, 12 for you, should be in good shape.
The Predators, according to MoneyPuck.com, now up to a 97.3% chance to make the playoffs. That does seem pretty high.
I mean, 12 games, and again, 12 games against good teams who are playing for things.
With a 4-point lead. It's pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
Maybe like 86, 88. I'd buy that. That's my Robbie Stanley percentage.
I mean, again, it's a 4-point lead with 2 games in hand, which you could look at like a, I don't know, to be conservative, a 6-point lead.
It is. You also play Florida and Pittsburgh this weekend.
Right.
That can go away quickly.
Yeah,
you know? I
mean, yeah, exactly. Like if you're Vegas looking at the Preds schedule, you're like, okay, I got a chance to make some gains on them. So that's going to be a real fun game Saturday, Florida in here. I mean, that team is, boy, are they good.
They are very good. And the Predators, a different lineup last night because Michael McCarron, not a part of it. He is now week to week with an upper body injury. So, you know, it's not the biggest loss that the lineup can sustain, but I thought, you know, the fourth line was playing pretty well, and he was a big part of that. So you have to shake things up last night. Luke Cunnan goes down to the fourth line as the center of the fourth line. Ellie Tolvanen back in the lineup yesterday and joins Granlund and Duchesne on that second line. He had, I think it was at the end of the second period, had a point-blank look right there in the slot and just shot it right into the crest of Anton Forsberg. And you could just see him after the play. The shoulders dropped. He was just like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Am I ever going to score a goal again?
It's amazing. It's so mental, you know. I mean, when things are going bad, that's what happens. You're just a little bit too, I don't know, what's the word, hyper?
Yeah.
Just a little bit too anxious to make the play, and it's like it's right there for you. Easy to talk about from the outside. It's tough when you're in it.
Another power play goal for the Predators last night, Ryan Johansson, in what ultimately is the game-winning goal. Pretty weird play. Yossi gets the puck at the top. It bounces off Duchesne, kind of like a weird, almost pop fly towards the net, and Johansson pounces on the rebound. Now, I thought they were going to look at it for a high stick for a minute, but they did not, and that's the game winner, Ryan Johansson. 4 goals in his last 2 games, 21 on the year. And nobody picked him in Preds Pick the Click yesterday. He was right there for me, and I let him go.
Yeah, no doubt. And I picked Forsberg. Now I'll never make that mistake again.
Nope.
Probably won't be first anyway. So
he's a drought.
Matter.
That's true.
How many games in a row has he not had a goal? Like two?
Two or three, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's literally two, yeah. That is
What's
true.
What's that? Yeah, that's true. Taken away
oh,
from
Oh, it was
you.
Taken away.
Taken away from, yeah.
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 So that means the listeners back in the lead in the competition. 18 correct answers now with the Duchesne goal yesterday, which, by the way, that first goal, I mean, Granlund, I don't know what Michael Delzato was doing on that play, but he was, like, not taking away the pass and not taking away the shot, which is basically the last thing you want to do as a defenseman.
Granlund, just kind of hang out in limbo.
Yeah, like the amount of patience that Granlund had on that play, because, I mean, he could have made 6 moves to shoot the puck himself. The amount of patience he had to get that thing over to Duchesne was pretty impressive yesterday. And then Duchesne just roofs it. So, hey, 5-on-5 goals for Duchesne. in two games in a row when you split that line up. Feeling okay about that, I think, right now.
And you got a race, Duchesne Forsberg, to the end.
Yeah.
38 goals, Forsberg, 37. Who will actually be the record holder? The record holder for goals in a season for the Preds.
It's going to be an interesting race coming down the stretch. I feel good about both of them get to 40 at this point. You know, can one of them get to 45? That's probably going to be a stretch. Maybe. I mean, it would be for Forsberg 7 goals in the last 12 games, so doable.
I mean, he's had those stretches, yeah. But that's asking a lot.
That's asking a lot. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, 42, 43, one of them finishes right there. So, pretty good stuff offensively for the Predators. And Roman Josi continues to be amazing as well. The goal did get taken away, but he does finish with 3 assists last night and is now officially the all-time leading scorer in a single season for the Predators. Now at 87 points, he passes Paul Kariya, whose franchise record was an 05-06 at 85. So still another three-point game, which I think is number 12 this year for Roman Josi at three-point games, which is absurd. Still on pace for 100 points and now officially the single-season points record holder for the Predators. Pretty amazing stuff from number 59 continually.
Yeah, and I think, again, I think that number's big just for the voter who doesn't pay a ton of attention but is going to quickly glance at things. You know, 13 points in 12 games. Get there, get to 100. Such a rarity. Such a short list. He's already on a short list of what he's done, but the 100 is like, wow.
Yeah.
For a defenseman. It's right there for him. So I think the Norris is really shifting his way, I think.
He's generating some momentum. I mean, you could tell last night. I mean, analysts across the country are all they're talking about right now defensively is Roman Josi, which this is a good time of year to be talking about that because the votes are coming up here in the next few weeks. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I don't know that it's criminal or over for Roman Josi right now, which I know we saw a couple of those on Twitter last night, but still a race at this point. But I'd say Josi is shifting to be the favorite in the competition.
You can call Martel up by name.
I love Martel, but my goodness, man.
I love Chris Martel, too. I can't wait till this fall when he has to figure out if he wants to root for the creepy Predator dude who quarterbacks his team.
Yeah, well, there is that.
That'll be interesting. I mean, just like for people who don't know, Chris Martel was like, it'd be criminal if Roman Josi doesn't win the Norris. And I'm like, criminal? And again, I'm not saying he's saying literally criminal, but
right.
but like, is it? It's like outrageous that Cale Makar could win the North. I mean, yeah.
I mean, Cale Makar is going to get some first place votes. I can tell you that.
Yeah, and I think that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a good race, but
Victor
Hedman's
probably going to get some first place votes too.
Yeah, and he's like the consistent. You could always
he's the
give
de facto.
It to him.
Oh yeah, Hedman.
Right, but I think that's what like guys like that have to have. You know, it's like Mahomes winning the MVP or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a race still. But I do agree that Josi should be ahead in it.
We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Predators. Get to some comments from Roman Josi last night as well after a record-breaking night for the captain. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Look who's going to get the assist. Just a play up the board. Smart heads-up play from Roman Josi to get it up to Granlund. Man, is he fun to watch on that. He does that consistently. That little move where he buys some time, changes the angle, and then gets that pass over and through perfectly.
Roman Josi now with 85 points. With that assist, tying Paul Kariya for the single-season club record for the Predators.
Big night for Roman Josi last night. He finishes the game with 2 more assists after that. Gets up to 87. Now the franchise record holder for points in a single season for the Nashville Predators. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Record-breaking night for Roman Josi. It feels like we're saying that on pretty much a game-by-game basis at this point. Now at 87 points, becoming the first defenseman to do that since the mid-90s. He's now the 13th defenseman in NHL history to get over 85 points in a season, and the first one since Brian Leetch did it way back in the day. So you're talking about really one of the greatest seasons that we've ever seen from a defenseman. When you factor in the points, you look at his analytics, his defensive numbers are very good as well. I mean, we're watching an all-time great season take place here that's not over at this point. He's got 12 games left. He could end up at 100 points, and it's going to be, without question at this point, the greatest season in Predators franchise history from a single player. And it was interesting. I was talking with Josi last night in the post-game press conference, and I almost wanted to like grab him and be like, hey, talk about yourself. Do something. Like, you're having a great season. And he just wants to talk about the team the whole time. But it's just incredible to watch this guy do what he does. And, you know, I saw your tweet last night, and I agree with it, like just dragging this team along with him. And I think sometimes people take that as maybe disrespect to other players on the team. And we all know that Forsberg's playing really well, and Duchesne's playing really well, and Johansson's playing really well. You can go up and down the list. But Roman Josi is clearly the most important player on this team, and he just does it every single night. And I think he's going to get there. I think he's going to get to 100. I think he's going to end up maybe over 100, 102, 103, somewhere in that neighborhood, which is I did not know if we would ever see that again with the way the game's played now and just how, you know, it's not the same as it was in the 80s and the early 90s and kind of the fire wagon hockey. I didn't know that we'd ever see a defenseman do something like this again, and here he is. He's getting ready to do it, I think.
Yeah, and if he can get to 103, that would tie him for 10th. He'd make the top 10 of all time. The top 10 is entirely Bobby Orr and Paul Coffey.
Yeah.
And some just, like you said, you know, I mean Coffey with the Oilers, you know, those teams, the numbers that they, a lot of them put up were just silly. Bobby Orr, we know Bobby Orr, you know, 139 points and 71 with the Bruins, 70 to 71. So those top seasons are in the 130s, 120s, but to be in the top 10 of all time and be the only guy. So go through this whole list. By the way, also, actually, he would tie Coffey and Al MacInnis, who, yeah, of course, coached by Crispy with Calgary,
yeah,
won a cup there with Calgary. But, I mean, I'm trying to see anyone recent. Look at this list. So right now on the list, he's 29th all time with where he is at 87. No one else in here. I don't see anyone in the 2000s.
No.
I don't see anyone. I mean, I'm going down the list. I mean, the most recent I see, you got Larry Murphy with the Penguins in 93. Okay, there you go, Burns.
Burns with 83, yeah, a couple years ago.
Yeah, Burns. So Burns and Josi in the top 50, the only two people since like 1995,
yeah,
to even be anywhere near this. I mean, that's absurd.
Well, and it's ridiculous. And I asked Roman Josi last night after the game, just, I know you're in a playoff race, got a lot of things going on right now, but can you stop to maybe take some time and appreciate what you're doing here? And here's what the Predators captain Roman Josi had to say last night after the 3-2 win against Ottawa.
You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, you're such a team first guy and always have been humble about your personal success, but are you able to appreciate kind of what you're doing right now? You're having one of the best seasons in the history of the league for a defenseman.
Yeah, I mean, I think throughout the season, you're obviously so caught up in the games. You play so many games, and we got two more coming up on the weekend. And I think you don't really have time to kind of settle down and reflect. But I think at some point when the season's over or later, I mean, I'll definitely appreciate this. I think it's good for players, for teams. If it's a win or other accomplishment, I think it's always good to be happy about those. I mean, it's such a fun game. We play the best game in the world, and I think you gotta enjoy those moments. But obviously, right now you're caught up in the season, and that's what you focus on. But yeah, I mean, I'll definitely appreciate it when I look back at some point.
That was Josi last night after the game. I guess that was about as close as he's gonna get to, oh well, yeah, at some point I'll recognize what I'm doing here. But
one day he's just gonna be like, yeah, fools, Read it and weep.
It's kind of amazing.
Eat my dust.
Like, think about this. He's the highest paid player on the team. $9.059 million per year, which, you know, I think we said at the time, I mean, he didn't get paid as much as Drew Doughty at the time, when I thought he probably could have if he went to the open market. I mean, the guy is – he's underpaid, and he makes $9.059 million per year. I think it's pretty clear that he's underpaid right now. Now, at the end of that contract, is he going to be underpaid? Probably not, but it's incredible what he's bringing to the table right now.
Yeah. Also, you know, to that point, probably shouldn't be anything but the highest paid player on the team.
Yeah.
As it relates to other things that are going on with the Nashville Predators.
Yep. That might be the case. Like, the case that anybody could make right now of, yeah, we deserve to be paid more money than Roman Josi on this team, that's a tough one to be.
Yeah.
Now,
maybe $9.058 million, Phil.
Yes. Sometimes, like, the market just dictates it, and it doesn't always work out that way. Like, I don't really think there's a receiver in the NFL right now that needs to be paid more than Davante Adams, but there now are two that are paid more than Davante Adams. So sometimes it's just the way things work out. But, yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see if there is a number with Philip Forsberg and the Predators at some point where that number lands, because I have a hard time believing it's going to be higher than Roman Josi.
I'm waiting.
We're all waiting.
Keep waiting.
We are all waiting. No question about that. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll hear from John McClain, legendary NFL writer, not from Die Hard, legendary NFL writer. He joined us on the show yesterday and offered his thoughts on the Titans. Had some great story time as well yesterday that you're really going to enjoy. We'll get to that conversation next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We were joined by John McClain yesterday, longtime writer from the Houston Chronicle, NFL legend on the program, and announced his retirement recently from the Houston Chronicle. You've grown up, if you've been around here for any length of time, you've heard John McClain before, and great time yesterday here on the show. He talked about the Texans and where they go from here at the quarterback position, gave some story time from his days covering the NFL that you're not going to want to miss, and offered his thoughts on the Titans and Amy Adams Strunk as well. Here was that conversation yesterday with John McClain from the Houston Chronicle. And welcome in the legendary John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John, what's going on? First off, thanks for taking time to join us. Congratulations on your retirement. One of the best to ever do it, and really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning here on the show.
No, thank you, Robbie and Joe. Thanks for having me on. I retired from the Houston Chronicle, but not the radio. I still do 10 shows in 6 cities. Love talking about sports, as I know you guys do too, and I'll probably pick up a little freelance, including from the Chronicle. I told them they use a couple of guys who retired after a long time, 10 years with the Chronicle. They still do some freelance around town when the paper needs them, and I told them if they need me, I'm available. So I think they said they could use me during the draft, so I said that would be great because the draft is my favorite time of the off season.
Well, that's awesome to hear, and the more we can hear you, the better off we're all going to be, John. So appreciate you taking time for joining us here on the show. I'm interested from your perspective, now that the Deshaun Watson situation is behind the Houston Texans, where do the Texans go from here? Do they view Davis Mills as potentially an answer as their long-term guy? What do you think of the Texans and where they kind of go from here now that Deshaun Watson is behind them?
Let me tell you, I'm so glad Watson's gone and he's Cleveland's problem, because for almost 15 months we dealt with that story on almost a daily basis. If I had a dollar for every talk show I'd done to talk about Watson or TV show or podcast during that period, I could have retired sooner. And people in Cleveland don't know how to handle the situation. You got the 22 civil lawsuits accusing him of sexual misconduct, assault, and harassment. But you have a great young quarterback who wants to play. But I don't have to worry, although, of course, it's still news in Houston, no matter what he does. Texans are committed to Davis Mills. Davis Mills over the last five games last season was better than any rookie quarterback, including Mac Jones. One of the last columns I wrote was comparing Jones and Mills down the stretch, all of those stats. And Mills, with the worst running game in the league and the second worst defense, was better than Jones, who had a top running game and a top defense with him. And so they're not saying they're committed to him long-term. They're not even saying they're committed to him next year, although I know they are, because I think they're open with the third pick. Somebody like, say, Carolina might get scared that someone else is going to trade up in desperation for Malik Willis and get a couple extra picks out of it. They got 11 picks right now. When Nick Caserio, the GM, makes some trades, other than moving up, I could see him making deals for the 2023 draft because they know they're in phase two of their rebuild. And Mills, you know, when they beat the Titans in Nashville, that was more of a case. Ryan Tannehill having the worst game of his career. And then Tyrod Taylor was a quarterback then. He didn't play worth a darn. But at the end of the year, when the Titans had to win to get home field advantage and they escaped by three, you know, Mills played well. So he had 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and he completed 69% for a rating of 104 down the stretch. So they like him. If he doesn't make the kind of improvement they hope, then they'll be back in the quarterback market next year when that draft is supposed to be outstanding for quarterbacks instead of this one, which is mediocre.
So, John, I know you've done a lot of reminiscing here, both in writing and doing all these shows you do, but I got to ask you one more. I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize in advance. The story that will stand out to you and I believe I'm 47 years at the Houston Chronicle, 51 years as a sports writer, the one story of all that time that you will stand out, whether it's your favorite story or the toughest story, or just what comes to mind when I ask that question?
Oh, there's so many, and I've been asked, and I wrote a column Sunday for the Chronicle on our website, TexasSportsNation.com. It's behind our paywall, and I've been telling people on my talk shows, if you want to read my 10 greatest, most memorable experiences, feel free. My new email is john.mclain, NFL, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to send it to them where it's not behind the paywall. And I'll tell you one when I was in the Waco paper and then one at the Chronicle. When in Waco, I was working for the Waco Tribune Era, legendary sports editor, Dave Campbell, founder of Texas Football Magazine. I learned from him, grew up reading him, and I got hired there going into my junior year at Baylor in June of 1972. And Baylor had not beaten Texas in 20 years, had not won the Southwest Conference in 50 years. And in 1974, they played the Longhorns. And Earl Campbell was a freshman and one of the most highly touted freshmen in the country. And they played at Baylor Stadium, and I was writing a Texas dressing room story. And I was still on my junior year at Baylor because I was working full-time. And Baylor was down 24-6 at halftime. And I walked to the back of the press box, and I saw so many fans leaving. I told Dave Campbell, worst thing about being a sports writer is you can't go home when you know your team is lost. And he said, young man, he said, you know, miracles do happen, so I wouldn't count the Bears out yet. And I said, well, I have. And Baylor came back and won that game. It's called the Miracle on the Brazos. And it was such a big deal. They left the scoreboard on all night, and the president of the university and the vice president slept in the press box. And it was in November, so it was foggy, and the scoreboard was shrouded in fog. And all night, fans just drove around the stadium looking up the scoreboard. And when I got home, my dad, who is the reason I love football, he'd watched Baylor since the 30s, he asked me, watching all the people go around the scoreboard, could we drive out and go around at one time? And I said, sure, this is like 10, 15. So we got in the car, he and my mom and my brother and I, we drove out there, huge traffic line, get in line. You just putzing along, but you didn't care. It was such a big deal. And I went around it once. He said, can we do it again? I was so tired and ended up driving around that damn stadium till like 3 in the morning. So finally I heard my dad snoring and we went home. And after one more win over Rice, Baylor won first Southwest Conference title in 50 years. So that was the one that stood out in Waco. And one I wrote about Sunday in my column was, of all the great memories I've had, I spent time with Bill Veeck at Comiskey Park in Chicago telling me about John Dillinger and Al Capone when his dad owned the Cubs. I spent a day with George Halas in his office with him telling me about Babe Ruth replacing him in right field for the Yankees and how what it was like the founding of the NFL when he was there with Jim Thorpe and others. And so I had so many wonderful memories, and I love history. You know, and people say my worst one, I say Buffalo, the biggest choke job in history, 35-3 after the 1992 season when the Oilers blew that game to the Bills, lost 41-38 in overtime, and vindication with the Music City Miracle to a lot of people in Houston. And people in Nashville didn't have to suffer through that Buffalo choke job. And but the one that stood out the most, in 1998, I noticed when the great Packers receiver Don Hutson died, that the last surviving member of the original class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1963 was Sammy Baugh, Slinging Sammy Baugh, quarterback for the Redskins, great baseball player in the Cardinals minor league system, just a tremendous personality who was famous for cussing like crazy. He had a TV show called Texas Rangers, and he lived on a ranch out in West Texas, and so I thought, man, I'd like to get an interview with him. And I had a friend here who told me one time he played dominoes with Sammy Baugh, and Baugh loved to play. So I called him. I said, Bill, if the Chronicle pays your way, can you line up an interview with Sammy, and let's go out there. So we did. We went to Lubbock. We drove to his ranch, and it's out in the middle of nowhere, and he lived in the same little house that he'd lived in since the late 30s. And he was by himself, and as soon as we got in there, he was cussing like a storm. And the Chronicle let me, with a disclaimer, that some of the language in here is not, you know, fit for newspaper, but they said if it didn't do it, it wouldn't capture the essence of Sammy Baugh. So we spent the night, I recorded 5 or 6 hours of tape, and the next day before we left, I asked him what was his favorite trophy in his trophy case, and he reached into the back, he pulled out a sheet of paper, blew dust off of it, held it up, and it was his only hole in one. He was 85, and he drove to Sweetwater, 30 minutes away, 5 days a week to play golf, and he didn't play on weekends because he watched golf. So we watched some golf with him, and he was such a character, telling me stories about when he was in the Cardinals minor league system. He was there with guys who would go on to be known as the Gas House Gang, and people don't know what that is, Google it. And it was all the great Gas House Gangers, and when they won championships with the Redskins, the owner would make them barnstorm across the South and play a game every few days so the owner could make more money. But when he was, I thought the best story he told me was playing minor league baseball for the Cardinals. There was a player on another minor league team that infuriated opponents. He was a right fielder. He was 17. And he said this kid would turn his back to the hitter when his pitcher was pitching to defy us to hit the ball out there. He'd do jumping jacks when we're trying to swing. He would sit. He would put his glove in his back pocket. And he said, I told the manager, how in the world do you let that sumbitch act like that when every one of us wants to beat the hell out of that bleeper? And he said, because the guys at the big league club tell me he's going to make them a lot of money someday. And he said, I understood it because when I was playing shortstop, he would hit a ball so hard I could hear the plank coming out of the fence before I could turn and see it. And he hit home runs you could hang clothes on. And so I said, that guy ever become anything? He said, well, you tell me. His name was Ted Williams. And I thought, wow, I've never heard stuff like that. And as we left, we're out on his porch, and he got his peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for the road. And I'm on his porch with him, and I said, Sam, he always signed things Sam Baugh because he tried to sign everything that was sent. People from all over the country would send balls and shirts and paper to the post office, said Sammy, Slinging Sammy Baugh Rotan, Texas, nothing else. So they knew where he was, and they'd bring it. And once every 2 weeks, his daughter-in-law would line up tables, and he'd go down and sign everything, Sam Ball, because he said, I can sign twice as much not signing, swinging Sammy Ball. So we're on the porch, and I said, why do you live out here in the middle of nowhere? Instead of living in Fort Worth, where he went to school at TCU or Sweetwater, so you don't have to drive this road to play golf. He said, you know what? He tugged at his pants, and he said, because, and I had to change a word here, anytime I got to take a leak, he said, I can come right out here on my porch, and I can pee anywhere, anytime. And he said, matter of fact, I got over there going right now. Want to join me? And I did. And I'm pretty sure nobody in the media who knew Sammy Barr covered him had ever been to his ranch on Rotan, Texas, taking a pee off his porch with him, except me.
Just incredible. John McClain from on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. John, last thing for you here. Obviously, you're very familiar with the Titans and this team becoming perennially a playoff contender. They're talking about building a new stadium here. I'm just curious, from your perspective, the job that Amy Adams Strunk has done since kind of taking control of things here in Nashville.
I remember when Amy got control of the team, she was very nervous about, you know, being in the spotlight. She'd always been in the background here. She lived on a ranch outside Houston in another little town, and she was a horsewoman. And I think the only time she'd ever been interviewed was for, like, Horseman magazines. And I remember telling her, people in Nashville are going to love you. You know, you ride horses. I said, got a great personality. Just let them get to know you. And I was there covering a game when she did her first interview in the press box, and I could tell how nervous she was. And now she just has just been like a cocoon and a butterfly as an owner. And she's beloved, respected, and I can't tell you how much I respect the job she's done, the way she's handled it. You know, I knew when they played in Kansas City in, 10-degree weather, a few years ago in the playoffs, and she went out in the parking lot, was hanging out with fans. And then when she was in London hanging out with the fans, that people would love Amy Adams Strunk. And I'll say this, she was so smart to get Mike Vrabel and John Robinson signed to extensions because they're a great duo. And I think they will always be contending for the AFC South title in the Super Bowl as long as they're there. And I think she's done a fabulous job, and I don't know anybody up there that's told me she hadn't. And I look forward to spending more time up there and coming to some Titans games since I'm not writing for the Chronicle anymore. And I think, again, I'll pick the Titans to win the division. Last year I picked them to get home field advantage, and they did. But I also picked them, I think, to go to the Super Bowl. So with Derrick Henry back and with they keep those guys healthy, you guys know they are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And all this stuff about Matt Ryan and the Colts, look at what Matt Ryan did last season. I don't automatically think they're going to win the division like some people think they are. So I think the Titans are in great shape again. Fans ought to be pumped. And I'll say this about that stadium. You better build it, because if somebody went through it here, I wrote about this Sunday, Bud Adams only wanted $180 million in public money. And Houston turned his back on him, and it was good for Nashville, and it was good for Houston because of the Texans, and it's good for me because Nashville is my home away from home. But, you know, that stadium is run down, and I saw the plans where it'd be better to build a new stadium next door instead of try to renovate it, and I think it's a good time to get that done because the Titans are good. It was their misfortune here to go from 12-4 to 2-14 when they were trying to get public money, and that's not the time to do it. So I hope it all works out, and I believe it will. Great football town. I can't believe how many, every time I come there, there's so many cranes. I can't keep up with all the building going on. So guys, thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate it.
Well, John, we appreciate you taking time to come on with us. Congratulations on a great career, and looking forward to hearing a whole lot more from you.
Guys, thank you very much, and have a great rest of the week.
That was John McClain on with us here yesterday on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get into some news yesterday for the Titans And it was not good news yesterday. We'll get Joe's thoughts on that as well. Got a lot of your thoughts to get to as well. 615-737-1025. This baseball season, turn K's into cash and big hits into big wins with FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, new customers can step up to the plate with a risk-free first bet up to $1,000. Just sign up, place your first bet, and FanDuel will refund you up to $1,000 back in site credit if you don't win. You've got the Yankees and the Red Sox today in a doubleheader. I think they split. I'll go Red Sox in the first game, Yankees in the second game. But you take it any way you want to take it. See for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up using promo code ROB to get started with your risk-free first bet up to $1,000. Once again, that promo code is ROB, exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Stop by Social Furniture at 5412 Charlotte Avenue in Nashville and enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Chicago Blackhawks coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, April the 16th. Also, don't forget to check out their new sofas while you're in there. Must be 18 or older to enter the contest. No purchase necessary. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got Tom Izzo coming up at 7:30. Looking forward to that conversation with him. TD coming up at 8 o'clock. Terry Crisp at 8:30 as well. And as always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Some news yesterday regarding the Tennessee Titans, and we've talked on the show about the Brian Flores lawsuit against the NFL, alleging racism in the hiring practices, and that goes back to his time with the Miami Dolphins. And we've talked about the Stephen Ross part of this, everything that's gone into it. It's been a situation where Flores is now a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers on that staff. But yesterday, Steve Wilks and former Titans defensive coordinator Ray Horton joining Brian Flores' lawsuit against the NFL as well, alleging racism in hiring processes. And Ray Horton was a member of the Titans back under the Ken Wisenhunt era, and then Mike Mularkey taking over as interim head coach after that. So Ray Horton adding his name to the lawsuit that Brian Flores has put out there, alleging racism in the hiring process. And Horton was interviewed by the Titans, and some comments made by Mike Mularkey, which, quick sidebar, maybe the most important, most incredible part of all of this is Mularkey made these comments on a podcast called The Steelers Realm back in 2020, and either I don't remember him or I just never saw him, but you're talking almost 2 years at this point that those comments have been out there, and I just don't remember this really even being a story here locally. I know Music City Miracles, who write about the Titans, their website had a story and a post about it that came out in 2020.
But not on that one.
Was it not on that one?
It was a Ross Tucker podcast.
Ah, it was a Ross Tucker. That's
right. In which he briefly referred to it, but that, I mean, what he said on that podcast was, I mean, he said something to the effect of, I can find it, but it was just like, you know, the Rooney process was averted or whatever. It was a very quick mention. But no, this podcast, I don't know anybody here who remembers it, saw it, because I think it would have been talked about. I mean, it's different now in the context of a lawsuit, right? I mean, that raises the stakes significantly, but still, that would have been talked about here for sure. I totally missed. When I read it and heard it yesterday, I thought it was like it had just happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute, September of 2020? What?
Yeah, Mike Mularkey on that podcast, and he said a lot of things and talked about, you know, priding himself on doing the right thing and not being able to say that about everybody in this business. But basically started talking about, you know, something that he regretted in Tennessee, that Amy Adams Strunk and her family came in and told him that he was going to be the head coach in 2016 before they went through the Rooney Rule. So the quote was, quote, "So I sat there knowing I was the head coach. I was their head coach sitting in 2016, and they went through this fake hiring process, knowing a lot of the coaches they were interviewing, knowing how much they prepared to go through those interviews, knowing they were doing everything they could do, and they had no chance of getting the job. This is the quote in the story from Mike Mularkey there. So, Joe, you've written a piece about this at theathletic.com. What is kind of your take on this situation that came about yesterday with Ray Horton joining Brian Flores' lawsuit against the NFL?
Well, first of all, I think the Horton aspect of this is being overplayed. And actually, Horton is technically inaccurate here because the Titans had already interviewed Terrell Austin. Terrell Austin was the, the Rooney Rule, get interviewed by a bunch of teams and don't get hired by anyone guy of that search. But the Titans interviewed him, which at the time satisfied the Rooney Rule. The Rooney Rule was at the time it mandated that teams interview one minority candidate. That got changed in 2020 to two. But so technically, Ray Horton was not the first minority candidate interviewed. So you can technically say, okay, well, that the Rooney Rule was already satisfied. But I mean, I've heard so many. The problem with these things is that we get into so many side arguments that really aren't relevant. And I have had so many conversations with people yesterday since writing this column. And also, I thought Jared and Caroline had a lot of good conversation on this yesterday. Horton is insignificant. I don't think anyone is saying, like, Horton should have been the head coach. What happened here is that the Titans did what happens all the time with the Rooney Rule. So they are an example of something that happens. But what doesn't happen too often is that a coach says what Mularkey just said. And I don't think what happens too often is that a coach is actually told that he's in on breaking the Rooney Rule. In fact, I have never heard of that before. And that's just really dumb. And then I think, honestly, the worst thing about yesterday, I know we have to go to break, we can talk about it, but the worst thing about yesterday with the Titans is the statement they put out. I mean, understanding that this is a legal situation, and in legal situations, there are organizations that put out false press releases to protect their butt legally all the time. This was so overstated, and everyone in that building knows without a shadow of a doubt that it is total BS. Everyone. It is absolutely ridiculous to come out and say what they said. So that, to me, is the most embarrassing part of it. I don't know what this will lead to for the Titans legally, but they've been caught in this thing, and it's really an embarrassment. I don't know if it goes beyond that.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll continue this discussion coming up next and get to the comments. We have the audio from Mike Mularkey on the podcast as well. Interesting stuff. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.